Hello and welcome to Explore, the regular podcast from the University of Exeter's Student Communications team. In each episode, we explore a different topic with students, staff and alumni, which reflects the richness of life within our global community. In this episode, we find out about the Level 7 Advanced Clinical Practitioner Degree Apprenticeship at the University of Exeter. Leading the discussion is co-programme lead, Kirsty Brown.
Hello and welcome to the Advanced Clinical Practitioner podcast. I'm Kirsty Brown, co-programme lead of the ACP pathway at Exeter University. And joining me today for a nice cup of tea and a chat is the lovely Kate. Hello, Kate.
Hi, and I'm Kate Emblin, so I am the co-programme lead with Kirsty for the ACP degree apprenticeship.
So I suppose really it'd be good for our listeners to know a little bit about ourselves and how we've ended up here.
So so I'm a pharmacist by background. I did my training in hospital pharmacy and worked in Southampton and then at the Royal Devon in Exeter. And I currently still work for the Royal Devon, but I work in the community now. So I work in community hospitals and in patients' homes doing medication reviews and helping people manage their medication. Mostly housebound patients. And alongside that, obviously, I work at the university 3 days a week. So I work on the ACP degree apprenticeship and also on the MSc clinical pharmacy as well.
I also started my work a long time ago, clinical work a long time ago. So I'm a paramedic by background. I trained in London and then came back to Devon, which is where I'm actually from. I took a, did a teaching qualification, took a role on as a lecturer in one of the local universities, and alongside working clinically in frontline ambulance service and then in primary care, I was working as a lecturer in paramedic science. And then decided to do my prescribing qualification as that was finally allowed for paramedics, and decided to work full-time within primary care for a little bit, and then academia has pulled me back in.
Pulled you back.
So now work at the university, same as Kate, so part-time, part clinical, part academic, and it's a really nice mix actually, isn't it, Kate? I think we've got a nice little way of working together, so that's good. With regards to kind of the point of the podcast today, it was to discuss National Apprenticeship Week and talk about how fabulous our apprentices are and also our programme. I suppose the main question probably will be, you know, why should I choose an apprenticeship in advanced clinical practice versus just doing a straight MSc pathway?
There's a few advantages of the apprenticeship that obviously it's funded within the NHS. You know, yeah. We all know how difficult it can be to get funding for sort of postgraduate education, and the funding for the apprenticeship comes through the apprenticeship levy, which big employers are paying into. So from their point of view, it's a, you know, the funding is there for you to do that. But I think also it's well supported. I think a big thing for the students is that you get protected learning time, so you get that 20% yeah. off the job time, so you're yeah. working alongside learning, but you get that protected day a week if you're full time for your study. Have your workplace mentor from work, you have your academic mentor from the university, so there's a huge amount of support to get you through that 3 years.
I think you know, looking at the program itself and the structure of the program, how we've decided to work it is that we have some compulsory modules that and the apprentice would take or student would take. So there's an underpinning compulsory module called the Principles of Advanced Clinical Practice, which I think really sets the scene and really the trajectory for the journey that the student's going to take through the 3 years. And it's a fab module, isn't it? And I think it's really just gets them thinking about those four pillars of advanced practice and how, you know, where the strengths and weaknesses lie, because in all of our clinical practice there are strengths and weaknesses. So, absolutely. You know, it's really good for us to have that reflective time. And then obviously alongside that, you've got that clinical skills module, which really just helps underpin anything that we're not saying, you have to be a competent advanced practitioner, you have to be able to, assess to this really stupidly high level. What we're saying is that people need to be safe, and they need to understand diagnostic procedures, and that they need to follow pathways and guidance, and also be able to think really autonomously. When you're in that advanced practice sphere, you're often thinking about prescribing for someone, you're thinking about following them up, you're thinking about referring them. So, you know, it's about
that basic skill set, isn't it? That all ACPs should have, that they can then develop in their own clinical specialty, but they've all got that basic background, that knowledge.
Level. Yeah. I think we think it's important anyway, don't we? That's why we've done it the way we have. But and I think, you know, also we've noticed that there are some big areas where maybe clinicians feel a little weaker, and so, you know, certainly in the program we've sought to improve that, and that's why we've created a research skills module which we encourage all the students to take, and you know, and also just tapping into that a bit further, there is a quality improvement project that we offer, don't we, in the third year, which students can look at an area of their clinical practice that they feel they'd like to change, and develop into a project that actually is box ready and could be taken straight into practice and delivered, and make those changes, make those clinical changes that people have often had that headspace maybe not to do prior to that. So I think, you know, we're obviously going to say this program is awesome, but we do really strongly feel it is. So I think there's lots of positives, isn't there? I think there's, as an advanced practitioner myself, I think the main focus sometimes can be a bit on the independent prescribing. Kate, do you feel that's fair enough? So what happens if a student already has prescribing? What would they do on this apprenticeship?
If the student's already got the prescribing qualification, then we do have an alternative which we would encourage students to do, which is called advanced skill development. And that's very much about the student looking at their role and their future role and identifying a skill that they want to develop. Also for the practitioners who aren't eligible to do prescribing. So there are some professions at the moment where you can't become an independent prescriber. So for those professions, you know, they've again got this module, this opportunity to, you know, develop an advanced skill or to further develop an advanced skill and really have that sort of time and space to focus on it.
I suppose, you know, we'll pay a little bit of homage to prescribing because I think it's important to discuss it. But, you know, people come on to the programme and their focus very much is prescribing. And I think from a programme team perspective, we're here to support you through that so that you're making those prescribing decisions at a level that isn't just this is what I think I need. You need to know the whys and the wheres, don't you, Kate? I think we revisit that throughout the program and we make you try and really hone your decision making skills. And we do that with problem-based learning, don't we? We do that with journal club meetings. We do that within peer teaching sessions. We ask students to submit academic posters, presentations, article summaries.
Making a podcast or a fireside chat. So in terms of assessment and how we assess kind of that development of knowledge and skills, we have lots of different forms of assessment. So it's not all about sitting down and writing essays or, you know, doing exams. There's loads of different sort of ways that we assess development.
We do need to kind of talk a little bit about the endpoint assessment. So within an apprenticeship, the students sit on the programme. They sit credits every year. There's a three-year programme. And as part of the final year, there's something called an endpoint assessment, which gives the student an apprenticeship qualification. This one is completely marked independently, so it's not marked by the programme team, and the students are guided through that process. It's something that, you know, we talk about very early on in the programme, we don't shy away from, and I think, you know, with hope, the students understand the importance of it, and it's nice, isn't it? It's nice to have two qualifications. You come away with an MSc and an apprenticeship.
And an apprenticeship, absolutely. And it's not, you know, it's nothing for them to worry about. It's just a case of them, you know, really having the opportunity to demonstrate everything that they've learnt and, you know,
just showcase come how away brilliant with the they are.
Absolutely, you know, yeah.
This is their time to shine. Their final sign off is by their workplace, which again, I suppose we need to flag up to workplaces, any workplaces listening, that, you know, this is your responsibility. You are the one that is going to deem them safe, appropriate and contemporary enough to be practicing at an advanced level. As to kind of, you know, we've talked a lot about the programme, haven't we? But do you think there's anything that I feel probably there is probably one thing I need to talk to the employer about if they are listening to this, which is, you know, the level of supervision required for our students, and just that, you know, like I did mention earlier, it is a commitment. It's a commitment from your workplace. It's a commitment from the student that attends the apprenticeship. It's a commitment from us, and we all sign a piece of paper to say that we're committed to each other. It makes it sound like a marriage, but it's not. It's just, I just think it's really important for the employer to know that, you know, this funding that's available is an investment into the future of how your workplace is going to look. And if you want your workplace to look, you know, positive, to be achieving, to be hitting levels of seeing patients or adhering to targets and meeting those targets, then we need to start being a bit forward thinking in the way that we're working out there. And I know that it's tough. We both know how it is. We both know that clinically, we have very little time, particularly in leadership roles, we have very little time to make these changes. But what we can do is start to change the narrative that, you know, clinicians can't go out and seek funding and get this extra help and get these qualifications to make changes, to make big changes in the workplace. And I think, you know, certainly with the levels of pressure that we're all under out there, you know, it more than ever, we need to be supporting our patients with giving them the right person in the right place. With workplaces, it's just to understand that, you know, that level of time you will see back, that is going to be that future person that's going to, you know, diminish your waiting list a little bit or take on a different patient group or a different caseload
or a different role, you know, or a different take on role. The role and free up somebody else to do something that only they can do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think it's a benefit, you know, from a recruitment and retention point of view. You know, we know in the Southwest that can be, you know, getting staff and retaining staff can be a real issue. And if this sort of thing is on the agenda for somebody to work towards or to, you know, to take on as an opportunity, that's really going to be of benefit because it's going to keep people within that organisation and they're going to inspire other people and support others through their training. And it's, you know, the spiral effect could really, you know, really benefit.
Yeah.
Organisations that way as well as clinically.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Joining us today is one of our third year apprentices, and we've invited her along, haven't we, Kate, just to have a chat with her about how she feels the apprenticeship is going for her, and hopefully in a roundabout way just kind of get her general feedback about the programme. So Kat, welcome to our little chat that we're having. If you'd like to introduce yourself and tell us more about what you do for a living, and then we'll, you know, crack on from there.
So I'm a diagnostic radiographer. I work at the acute site in Exeter at Wanford Hospital, and after my radiography training, I went on and did some postgraduate study in ultrasound, and so I became a sonographer. And there's been a bit of a requirement in our department to think about developing roles to try and there's a lot of demand and not enough capacity. So sort of being a bit creative about how we address that issue with the work in the NHS. And so they've created a new role in our department where I'm taking on some activity that was traditionally very much the remit of consultant radiologists. So I'm doing interventional imaging procedures, sort of ultrasound guided biopsies, CT guided biopsies, drainages, things like that. So really exciting. And my apprenticeship on this course has been sort of the academic award to support that clinical activity.
Amazing, thank you. So Capguards to you know, you talk a little bit about your role and how you're taking on consultant level work, really. How do you think that's benefited your current clinical role? Do you feel that that's been a positive, or do you feel that that's been quite difficult to manage?
A bit of both, really. So although there are other trusts around the country that have got radiographers doing roles similar to mine, it's a brand new role in our trust. So quite all of the challenges that come with being a bit of a pioneer, you know, with paperwork, processes, making mistakes and learning from them, and putting policy and procedure in place to make sure that there's really good, safe, robust governance supporting this new clinical activity that I'm doing. So that's all been quite challenging, but the benefits sort of outweigh those challenges, really. So the apprenticeship has offered like a funded opportunity for our department to develop this new role, which it is, you know, we all know if in the NHS money is really difficult to sort out. So we're drawing down from this apprenticeship levy that the trust is paying into anyway. My manager doesn't have to worry about money. So that's one big tick for her. And then, you know, there's this extra NHS England funding for not only me, but also for my clinical supervisor. So he can draw down on funds to support me in supervising me, which is great for him. Sort of going back to archaic NHS sort of setups, I think maybe in the past, my personal experience is that it's always been a bit like blurred what's expected of you as a student and what the workplace is expected to do to support you in any training that they put you through. And with the apprenticeship, there's this really clear tripartite agreement from the outside. So everybody knows exactly what it is that they've got to bring to the party and what's expected of them. Sort of on that topic, the apprenticeship as a student, you get this ring fence protected study time, which is just absolutely invaluable, because you can always go back to your contract and say, oh, not that I've experienced that in my department, but if say you were experiencing that challenge as a student, you can always go back to that document and say, oh, actually, you know, I do really need this time to be able to do all of the study that you've said that I could do.
I think that's helped with other students in your position as well, hasn't it? I mean, certainly your colleagues throughout the programme, that's been a real benefit of doing an apprenticeship at your level, at your clinical level.
Hugely. And one of the things that I thought was a challenge initially, but has actually ended up being a bit of a cloaked benefit, is when we first sort of set out on the course, you know, as a diagnostic radiographer, I was very much in the minority compared to paramedics and nurses, and their working context very much was kind of like in primary care or in ED. And so I felt a little bit out on a limb as a diagnostic radiographer. I didn't feel like I quite fitted in, but we forged away, both like myself as a student and the course developing with feedback and stuff. But being in that multidisciplinary group as a group of students has been invaluable learning, you know, like we've all picked up nuggets of information from each other. So what could be interpreted as a difficult thing, with you all being from different professions and making that qualification suit all of your needs, is actually I personally think has been really positive and great networking, you know, across the region, like bump into people in the corridor or, you know, you think, oh, I know so-and-so does diabetes and I've got a diabetes question. I'll just drop them an email. Mm. So, yeah, it's been really, really hard work, but so far I've not passed yet. Hopefully I'll pass. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's been great.
Good. I mean, is there any area, I mean, it's really hard, isn't it, for me to ask you this after 3 years of the programme, your brain, and currently with what you're doing on your current module, I'm sure your brain's a bit fried, but is there any area kind of in particular that you think, wow, actually that's really stood out to me as an area that I've seen myself develop? Or do you think it's really just a case of really fully understanding the purpose of multidisciplinary working and all the fruitful conversations you can have from that?
Yeah, I mean, sort of, if we're looking like at advanced practice, I think the pillar that personally I've developed myself the most is the educational theory. I think for me personally, that was one of my weakest pillars, and I've definitely, that's been the standout learning theory for me. But I think more generally, I thought I knew what advanced practice was. Doing the apprenticeship has made me appreciate that it's not just about being good at a clinical skill in practice. It's this sort of like broadening of your knowledge across your area of practice whilst developing clinical skills in a very specific area. So I think that would be my take home message from what I've learned of the course.
Yeah, that's fab. Thank you. That's brilliant. Is there anything that you would kind of give out, kind of advice wise, kind of, like a bit like a top tip for success on an ACP apprenticeship? Is there anything that you would suggest to any aspiring students out there?
I mean, I'm a big fan of a notepad and making a list.
Yeah, excellent.
I think the key is be prepared for it to be hard work but worth it, and just to be really quite organized and start right from the beginning, little and often, with your recording of you know, the hours that you are doing for your off the job training and stuff. So organization I think is really, really important, and or find a way to be organized if that's not your strong suit. And then, if I'm allowed, two top tips.
Of course, yeah.
My second one would be pinched from a colleague who's on the course with me, and he said that we need to work smarter, not harder, and sort of always thinking about what you're doing and how you can capture that activity and record it as evidence to support what you are doing as an advanced practice, you know, as an advanced practitioner, because then you've got all of that evidence then ready at the end point assessment, at the end of your 3 years, you can just present what you do, and that evidence is and helps you get through that gateway. So organisation and work smarter, not harder.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fab. Thank you. Thank you, Kat, for coming along today and having a chat with us. Like, we appreciate it so much, and we know how busy you guys are. Wishing you all the best with the rest of your studies, and look forward to celebrating with you all once you're all fully through the gateway and the EPA after the summer. Kate, what do you think, you know, talking to our past selves, and we, you know, when we took on the role of co-program leads and we knew that this program was something special, what do you think we would now tell our future selves about the future of ACP? Do you think we would say this is like one to watch, or do you think we're going to be looking at this again and thinking, oh my god, we need to change it all because it's completely blown up? Or
no, I definitely think as a role, ACP is definitely, you know, it's definitely a role to watch. If you think about how many more ACPs and trainee ACPs you know, are being recognised, because there's people who've been doing this role for, you know, years, and, you know, doing it in not in the shadows, but doing it kind of without really getting that recognition and really, really being recognised for, you know, how much knowledge they have and how amazing they are and what an amazing, you know, role they have and what they could have for people. And I think, you know, now that's being recognised, I really think that, I hope it's only going to, you know, get better. And there's, you know, you look at our students and the roles that they all have and that they're looking at developing, you know, there's amazing opportunities for people out there with this sort of role in primary care and in secondary care and in, you know, really specialist fields as well. Yeah. But, you know, I really think it's, yeah, going, yeah, it's going places, this.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I think, you know, the only, I think future, just to tell future self, future me, that, you know, ACP of the future will only make the patient journey better. I just don't see it being any different. No. Other than that, I think the you know, and the as soon as there's more and more of us, and as soon as they understand that actually they get the right care, right, with the right person, yeah, with the right expertise,
in
the right place,
yeah, absolutely. I just
think, you know, the patients are going to be on board with that, and you know, they're gonna, the role of an ACP will just be as it is now, as you know, as nurse or paramedic or midwife, they'll just, yeah, understand that an ACP is who they are and yes, what they do. So yeah, I think future me, that will be my aspirations, is that we just know that an advanced clinical practitioner will just sort it out for you, and that's, yes, great.
Absolutely, they are the person that you need.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think you know, certainly future aspirations further than patient journey for us is looking at you know, consultant level, looking at pushing further clinical boundaries. And I think with the kinds of people that are applying for this program, that's just going to happen, because they are progressive, they're ambitious, yeah, and they want this, they want to make changes. Yeah. So I fully expect to watch this space, to be honest. And that's where I am with it. Oh, it's been so nice to talk to you, Kate.
Yes,
we very rarely get to spend an hour together, do we? So it's
not
nice
very often, so it's nice to
and hopefully, you know, this reaches the people that we'd like it to and is well received. And thank you ever so much for taking the time to listen to us waffle on. Yes. But as you can hear, we're both very passionate about advanced clinical practice, and you know, we want to make this role as you know, understood and to be as super as it actually is.
Thanks for listening to Explore, the regular podcast from the Student Communications team. You can find more podcasts reflecting life at the University of Exeter by searching for Explore on your preferred podcast provider. You'll also be able to follow or subscribe for future episodes.